Chapter 21. Last Incumbent. This, says the Eagle, can be a good title, for the late king had no right to make a deed of gift of the crown, since a king is only tenant for life, and succession of crowns either must descend by a lineal progression in the right of primogeniture, or else they lose the tenure and devolve on the people. Now as this argument holds good, the Eagle has an undoubted title to the crown of Ebronia. But then, says his Eaglish Majesty, I cannot accept of the crown myself, for I am the Eagle, and my eldest son has two kingdoms already, and is in a fair way to be Eagle after me, and 'tis not worthwhile for him, but I have a second son, and we will give it him. Now may the king of Gallienaria say, if one gift is good, another is good, and ours is the first gift, and therefore we will keep it. And so I solemnly declare I should be very sorry to see the crown of Ebronia rest in the house of the Gallienarian, because our trade will suffer exceedingly. Yet if never so much damage were to come of it, we ought to do justice in the world. If neither the Eagle nor his eldest son will be king of Ebronia, but a deed of gift shall be made, the first gift has the right, for nothing can be given away to two people at once, and 'tis apparent that the late king had as much right to give it away as anybody. The poor Ebronians are in a fine condition all this while, that nobody concerns them in the matter. Neither party has so much as thought it worth while to ask them who they would have to reign over them. Here has been no assembly, no cortes, no meeting of the people of Ebronia, neither collectively or representatively, no general convention of the nobility, no house of feathers, but Ebronia lies as the spoil of the victor wholly passive, and her people and princes, as if they were wholly unconcerned, lie by and look on. Whoever is like to be king, they are like to suffer deeply by the strife, and yet neither side has thought fit to consult them about it. The conclusion of the whole matter is in short this: here is certainly a false step taken. How it shall be rectified is not the present business, nor am I wise enough to prescribe. One man may do in a moment what all the lunar world cannot undo in an age. 'Tis not bethought the Eagle will be prevailed on to undo it, nay, he has sworn not to alter it. I am not concerned to prove the title of the present king of Ebronia, no, nor of the Eagles neither, but I think I can never be answered in this, that this gift of the Eagles to his second son is preposterous, inconsistent with all his claim to the crown, and the greatest confirmation of the title of his enemy that it was possible to give, and no doubt the Gallienarians will lay hold of the argument. If this prince was the Eagle's eldest son, he might have a just right from the concession of his father, because the right being inherent, he only received it from him an investiture of time. But as this young gentleman is a second son, he has no more right, his elder brother being alive, than your Grand Sagnier, or Tsar of Muscovy in your world. Let them fight then for such a cause, who valuing only the pay, make war a trade, and fight for anything they are bid to fight for, and as such value not the justice of the war, nor trouble their heads about causes and consequences, so they have their pay, 'tis well enough for them. But were the justice of the war examined, I can see none, this declaring a new king who has no right, but by a gift, and pulling down one that had it by a gift before, has so much contradiction in it, that I am afraid no wise man, or honest man will embark in it. Your humble servant, the Man in the Moon. I would have nobody now pretend to scandalize the writer of this letter, which being for the Gallienarians, for no man in the moon had more aversion for them than he, but he would have had the war carried on upon a right bottom, justice and honesty regarded in it, and as he said often, they had no need to go out of the road of justice, for had they made war in the great Eagle's name all had been well. Nor was he a false prophet, for as this was ill-grounded, so it was as ill-carried on, met with shocks, rubs, and disappointments every way. The very first voyage the new king made, He had like to have been drowned by a very violent tempest, things not very usual in those countries. And all the progress that had been made in his behalf, when I came away from that lunar world, had not brought him so much as to be able to set his foot upon his new kingdom of Abronia, but his adversary by wonderful dexterity, and the assistance of his old grandfather the Gallienarian monarch, beat his troops upon all occasions, invaded his ally that pretended to assist him, and kept a quiet possession of all the vast Abronian monarchy. And but at last by the powerful diversion of the Salianarian fleet, a shock was given them on another side, which if it had not happened, it was thought the new king had been sent home again reinfecta. Being very much shocked in my judgment of this affair, by these unanswerable reasons, I inquired of my author who were the directors of this matter. He told me plainly it was done by those great statesmen, which the Salianarian queen had lately very justly turned out, whose politics were very unaccountable in a great many other things, as well as in that. 'Tis true, the war was carried on under the new ministry, and no war in the world can be juster, on account of the injustice and encroachment of the Gallienarian monarch. The queen therefore and her present ministers go on with the war on principles of confederacy. 'Tis the business of the Salianarians to beat the invader out, and then let the people come and make a fair decision who they will have to reign over them. This indeed justifies the war in Abronia to be right, but for the personal procedure as before, 'tis all contradiction and can never be answered. I hope no man will be so malicious as to say I am hereby reflecting on our war with Spain. I am very forward to say it is a most just and reasonable war, as to parallels between the case of the princes, in defending the matter of personal right, hic labor, hoc opus. Thus however you see humanum est error, whether in this world or in the moon, 'tis all one. Infallibility of counsels any more than of doctrine is not in man. The reader may observe, I have formerly noted there was a new consolidator to be built, and observed what struggle there was in the moon about choosing the feathers. I cannot omit some further remarks here, as, 1. It is to be observed, that this last consolidator was in a manner quite worn out. It had indeed continued but 3 years, which was the stated time by law, but it had been so hurried, so party-rid, so often had been up in the moon, and made so many such extravagant flights, and unnecessary voyages thither, that it began to be exceedingly worn and defective. 2. This occasioned it that the light fluttering feathers, and the fermented feathers made strange work of it. Nay, sometimes they were so hot, they were like to have ruined the whole fabric, and had it not been for the great feather in the center, and a few negative feathers who were wiser than the rest, all the machines had been broke to pieces, and the whole nation put into a most strange confusion. Sometimes their motion was so violent and precipitant, that there was great apprehensions of its being set on fire by its own velocity, for swiftness of motion is allowed by the sages, and so's to produce fire as in wheels, mills and several sorts of mechanic engines which are frequently furred, and so in thoughts, brains, assemblies, consolidators, and all such combustible things. Indeed these things were of great consequence, and therefore require some more nice examination than ordinary, and the following story will in part explain it. Among the rest of the broils they had with the grandees, one happened on this occasion. One of the tacking feathers, being accidentally met by a grandee's footman, whom it seems wanted some manners, the slave began to halloo him in the street, with a tacker, a feather fool, a tacker, and so brought the mob about him, and had not the grandee himself come in the very interim, and rescued the feather, the mob had demolished him, they were so enraged. As this gentleman feather was rescued with great courtesy by the grandee, taken into his coach and carried home to his house, he desired to speak with the footman. The fellow being called in was asked by him who employed him, or set him on, to offer him this insult. The footman, being a ready bold fellow, told him, "Nobody, sir, but you are all grown, so ridiculous to the whole nation, that if the 134 of you were left but to us footmen, and it was not in more respect to our masters than you, we should cure you of ever coming into the Consolidator again, and all the people in the moon are of our mind." "But," says the feather, "why do you call me fool too?" "Why, sir," says he, "because nobody could ever tell us what it was you drove at, and we have been told you never knew yourselves. Now if one of you tacking feathers would but tell the world what your real design was, they would be satisfied. But to be leaders in the Consolidator, and to act without meaning, without thought or design, must argue your fools, or worse, and you will find all the moon of my mind." "But what if we had a meaning?" says the feather man. "Why then," says the footman, "we shall leave calling you fools, and call you knaves, for it could never be an honest one, so that you had better stand as you do. And I make it out thus. You knew that upon your tacking the Crowleans to the tribute bill, the grandees must reject both, they having declared against reading any bills tacked together, as being against their privileges. Now if you had any design, it must be to have the bill of tribute lost, and that must be to disappoint all the public affairs, expose the Queen, break all measures, discourage the Confederates, and putting all things backward, bring the Gallienarian forces upon them, and put all Sullianaria into confusion." "Now, sir," says he, "we cannot have such coarse thoughts of you, as to believe you could design such dark, mischievous things as these, and therefore we chose to believe you all fools, and not fit to be put into a Consolidator again, the knaves and traitors to your country, and consequently fit for a worse plus." The plainness of the footman was such, and so unanswerable, that his master was fain to check him, and so the discourse broke off, and we shall leave it there, and proceed to the story. The men of the feather, as I have noted, who are represented here by the Consolidator, fell all together by the ears, and all the moon was in a combustion. The case was as follows. They had three times lost their qualifying law, and particularly they observed the grandees were the men that threw it out, and notwithstanding the plot of the tackers, as they call it them, who were, as I noted, observed to be in conjunction with the Crowleans, yet the law always passed the feathers, but still the grandees quashed it. To show their resentment at the grandees, they had often made attempts to mortify them, sometimes arraigning them in general, sometimes impeaching private members of their house, but still all would not do. The grandees had the better of them, and going on with regularity and temper, the Consolidators or feather men always had the worst. The grandees had the applause of all the moon, at the last blow on every occasion, and the other sunk in their reputation exceedingly. It is necessary to understand here that the men of the feather serve in several capacities, and under several denominations, and act by themselves, singly considered. They are called the Consolidator, and the feathers we mention it abstracted from their persons, make the glorious engine we speak of, and in which, when any sudden motion takes them, they can all shut themselves up, and away for the moon. But when these are joined with the grandees, and the queen, so united, they make a great Cortez, or general collection of all the governing authority of the nation. When this last fraction happened, the men of the feather were under an exceeding ferment. They had in some passion taken into their custody some good honest lunar countrymen, for an offense, which indeed few but themselves ever imagined was a crime, for the poor men did nothing but pursue their own right by the law. 'Tis thought the men of the feather soon saw they were in the wrong, but acted like some men in our world, that when they make a mistake, being too proud to own themselves in the wrong, run themselves into worse errors to mend it. So these lunar gentlemen, disdaining to have it said they could be mistaken, committed two errors to conceal one, till at last they came to be laughed at by all the moon. These poor men, having lain a long while in prison, for little or no crime, at last were advised to apply themselves to the law for discharge. The law would fairly have discharged them, for in that country, no man may be imprisoned, but he must in a certain time be tried, or let go upon pledges of his friends, much like our giving bail on a writ of habeas corpus. But the judges, whether overawed by the fetters, or what was the cause, authors have not determined, did not care to venture discharging them. The poor men thus remanded, applied themselves to the grandees who were then sitting, and who are the sovereign judicature of the country, and before whom appeals lie from all courts of justice. The grandees, as in duty bound, appeared ready to do them justice, but the queen was to be applied to, first to grant a writ, or a warrant for a writ, call it in their country a writ of follies, which is as much as to say mistakes. The consolidators, foreseeing the consequence, immediately applied themselves to the queen with an address, the terms of which were so unduel and unmanly, that had she not been a queen of unusual candor and goodness, she would have treated them as they deserved, for they upbraided her with their freedom and readiness in granting her supplies, and therefore as good as told her they expected she should do as they deserved. These people that knew the supplies given, were from necessity, legal, and for their own defense, while the granting their request, must have been illegal, arbitrary, a dispensing with the laws, and denying justice to her subjects, the very thing they ruined her father for, were justly provoked to see their good queen so barbarously treated. The queen, full of goodness and calmness, gave them a gentle kind answer, but told them she must be careful to act with due regard to the laws, and could not interrupt the course of judicial proceedings, and at the same time granted the writ, having first consulted with her counsel, and received the opinion of all the judges, that it was not only safe, but just and reasonable, and a right to her people which she could not deny. This proceeding galled the fetters to the quick, and finding the grandees resolved to proceed judicially upon the said writ of follies, which if they did, the prisoners would be delivered and the follies fixed upon the fetters, they sent their pursuivants, took them out of the common prison, and conveyed them separately and privately in two prisons of their own. This rash and unprecedented proceedings pushed them farther into a labyrinth, from whence it was impossible they could ever find their Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.